Good morning to all of you. If you would, please, find Genesis in your Bible. According to my records, we're around lesson 26, and we're around chapter 28, so we're going pretty good. Used to be we'd try a book a week. Now it looks like we're doing about a chapter a week on average. At this rate, I think maybe around 2050 or 2055 we might be through. We looked last week at Genesis chapter 27. Jacob had early on in his time tricked or convinced Esau to give up his birthright. Isaac now thinks he's at the end of his life. He's mistaken. He's got another 43 years to live, but he thought he was about to die. And so he called Esau to come and get the blessing. There appears to be some evidence that this was in direct conflict with what God had revealed to him about who was supposed to get that blessing, but there he went. There was some evidence he was doing this surreptitiously. He wasn't calling a big grouping, a big gathering, a big celebration. He was going to just do this on the quiet during an afternoon. Jacob and Rachel, especially Rachel, conspired and took the blessing, and this ends up with Jacob in danger. Esau is probably going to be plotting revenge. So Rachel has now maneuvered Isaac into sending him away. The basis of that is Isaac's unhappiness on Esau's choice of wives. He's married a couple of women from the population around and not from within the family. And so consequently, they've sent him away. If you take a look at Genesis 28, 6, 7, 8, and 9, you notice that Esau is sort of recognizing this unhappiness. And so he decides to marry within the family, but he goes and marries one of Ishmael's daughters. That didn't seem to work a whole lot better. So we're picking up with Genesis chapter 28, verse 10. If you've been reading ahead, you'll be ready for this. But in essence, we meet Jacob in chapter 10, leaving his home and headed for Haran, which is where relatives of Rachel had come from, where her father was and where her brothers were. I think that place is also called Paddan Aram in some translations. It's called Haran in some translations. Those are places not too far away, and it may be that one is on the way to the other. I want to begin by asking you, can you picture the condition that Jacob is in? A little bit of a review. What do we know about Esau? If you were here last week, you might be able to do this.
Firstborn,
but firstborn by a matter of minutes. What do we know about him as he grew up?
Well, he's a manly man.
A manly man, and that is actually an echo from the 11 o'clock class. They put a basket into the auction for the youth a week ago that they called the Manly Man Basket. In that basket were the materials and equipment you would need to render deer into sausage. You know, that's manly man. I heard it didn't sell all that well, but they did it. What do we know about Jacob? We don't know this for sure, but it seems to fit. One is a man's man. He's outside. He's hunting. He's doing all those big manly things. And Jacob is hanging around the tents learning how to cook and things of that sort. It's not too much of a stretch to put those two words on, but I do want you to let those words lie gently on these two people. In any event, Jacob has spent his life surrounded by his parents, his family, and all the servants, all the parts of a good life. Where is he now? On the road. What does he have with him? What he can carry and what Rachel has given him to carry. What is he experiencing, maybe for the first time? Number one, he's alone. And he probably has not experienced that before. If you're feeling lonely, what happens? I'm trying to see where you go with this. I know something where I go with these thoughts. I don't know where you go with these thoughts. What are the experiences of being lonely? Fearfulness,
and
pressure.
I think it makes you feel time to be maybe thoughtful and think things out. What's going on?
Really?
It would do me. I'd be that way if I'm alone.
Okay. I would be the opposite. I would think a lot, but I don't know that I would think productively.
Depression.
Yeah, I think I would ease into. I'm presenting to you. I think that feeling could have one where the aloneness, where the loneliness is actually amplified by being alone. Mm-hmm. It's one of those that whatever the feelings are, they are amplified by the condition, to where you feel worse and worse and worse with every step you take. What else is he experiencing? Somebody said hunger. I doubt that yet. Rachel probably would have put enough food on his back for a day or two. And we're still talking about the first day.
He had a rock for a pillow.
Not yet. He was still on the road. But he will soon.
He's probably tired from these days.
I think you could surmise he might be tired. That this would be something Esau could probably take, pardon the pun, in stride. Thank you. But maybe not Jacob. He might not be used to walking. And he might not have prepared for this. Okay? So probably feeling alone, tired. What else? What else? I led you to one and you haven't gone back to it.
Scared.
What was his condition? Where had he been all of his life so far? Living in what would have been, for the time, the lap of luxury. What does he have with him? Only what he can carry on his back. Provisions for a day or two, maybe. Maybe a change of clothes. What's he experiencing for the first time in his life? Want. Not just loneliness, but he is facing the prospect of, okay, I see how I can live for the next 2 days. What's going to happen after that? He's heading into an unknown place. He's heard stories about Haran and Paddan Aram. He's heard stories about the people in this place. But that was a long time ago. Contact of this sort would have been tough. Time out for a moment. I've been taking a little poll among the international students that I work with. I had the chance to speak to a young lady on Friday night, I think it was, who lived in Cyprus. She's at the university. Judith, I think we've already talked about this. She's at the university attending on a Fulbright scholarship. This is pretty cool. I didn't know that's how she got there. Fulbrights go both ways. And I said to her, do you speak to your mama? And she said what almost all the other international students have said. You know what she said? Every day. How does she do it?
Skype.
That technique is amazing to me. They didn't have Skype. I understand Google Mail. There's now a little button over in the corner. I have not pushed that button yet, so I don't know what it does. But Google Mail apparently lets you do Google. What you can't say Google Skype because there's a trademark on Skype. But you know, you can.
Not everyone knows Skype.
Oh, well, let me explain to those of you who are technophobic, uneducated. That's the purpose of a teacher, is to teach the uneducated. Do not blanch at that one, folks. Do not blanch at that one. Skype is a technology that if you have a computer with a camera built into it, a face forward camera as opposed to a face backward camera. The new iPad is now remarkable because, unlike the first one, it has both cameras. So you can pick your iPad up and show people what you're seeing, and they can also see. Skype is a technology that lets you have video conversations with somebody in another place. I think the most exotic thing I have done with this was to tell a student in Beijing, China, that he had won a full ride scholarship to the University of Richmond. That was about a year ago. I had the chance to make that call. I saw him face to face in his flat or his apartment in Beijing and talked to him face to face. My sister-in-law, their grandson, their only grandson, I think turned 2 this month. Was it 2 or 3? 2, I think. From his birth, every morning at breakfast, her daughter in Charlotte sets up the computer. Here's the kid with breakfast. Here's the computer with grandma on the screen. And grandma entertains and talks to the kid all through breakfast while mama goes off and does all the things she does. Does that every single morning. Every single morning. That kid knows his grandma. Doesn't know his granddaddy quite so well, but knows his grandma. Skype is powerful. So here these kids are talking every day using Skype. And there's going to be other kinds of systems that will do similar things. My point is, Jacob didn't have Skype. Have I got my point? There is an aloneness that's here that's accentuated by this loss of continuity. He doesn't know where he's going, doesn't know where he's been. The second piece to this, he is, for the first time in his life, having this sudden thought, okay, I know what I'm going to eat today. Maybe I can stretch it to where I'll have something to eat tomorrow. What am I going to wear? What am I going to eat? Where am I going to sleep? And what's coming is that night, maybe for the first time in his life, he has the most unusual pillow that he's ever had. His pillow's a stone. He's having experiences he hasn't had. He's feeling alone. He's feeling impoverished. Scared goes somewhere in there. Those are sort of the big two so far. I think there's a third one you need to set alongside of this.
Anxiety,
I think, would be very much a part of this, yes. But I think there's one more.
Does he feel lost? I mean, does he know his way?
Lost, scared, anxious, all of those terms are built into this. Yes.
How is he gonna
there is another huge category.
Homesick.
Homesick, doubt. How's he going to live? How's he going to work? All that. Yes, there's one huge category. Why did he leave? What are the servants thinking who used to be his friends? What is his relationship with his parents? How brightly are the flames on the bridge burning? He is ashamed.
You think he's ashamed?
Ashamed. Or at least he's feeling the reproach. He is feeling the disapproval. I suspect if you ask him and if he were honest, he would say Esau has a right to be mad. That's a new experience, probably. Now, I think there's 1,000 more things we could say. My sense is they fit either into or in between these three big categories. The one is alone. The one is impoverished. The resources he had depended on have been taken away. And the third one is a sense of reproachment, a sense of shame, a sense of people judging him negatively, and maybe for right reason. And verse 11 says, when he had reached a certain place, yes, he had reached a certain place, he stopped there for the night. Why did he stop there for the night? Mine has, he stopped there for the night, comma, since, and it tells you why he stopped there for the night. The sun had set. What's the difference between the sun was setting and the sun had set? The light is gone, or nearly gone. It might be twilight. Maybe you could make it another quarter of a mile. Maybe you can make it another half mile. Okay? Does he stop in a populated place? Does he enter a well-lighted tavern with the songs of convivial laughter and singing to accompany him? Does he take a bed in an upstairs room and sleep with the sounds of mirth and laughter and joy around him? No, he does not. Where does he sleep? Taking one of the stones of that place, he made it his pillow, and he lay down right where he was. If you look forward, which I hope all of you have, I hope all of you have already read all the way through this, where was he? He was a place called Luz, L-U-Z.
That's a good word. I'll write that down. He was a place called Luz.
But not in the village. He's out in the country, probably within sight of it. Chances are he hasn't gone into that town because he's not sure what they'll do. He doesn't know if what he has done, if news of that has preceded him. We're guessing on that, but that could be. We've encountered this place before in our study so far. It was Abraham who had been here once before. You remember what Abraham did when he was in this place before? Unlikely you would. I've seen the patterns. I don't know that I would have remembered without some research. Abram had an encounter with God and set up an altar here. There's a few commentators think that in the dark he may have taken one of the stones off Abraham's altar to make for his pillow. It's a pretty story, maybe it's not true, but he's certainly in the right place for that to have happened. And he goes to sleep. And verse 12 says he had a dream. What was his dream? Okay, let's get the words. Staircase to heaven, that sounds like Broadway.
It does.
That's not what it is, quite. Staircase, I need that word. What did yours translate that word?
Stairway.
Stairway to heaven sounds even more like Broadway, I think it goes.
Sounds like a TV
ladder.
Show.
Ladder's what mine has. One translation has the word bridge. I think the concept is good. I think the picture is wrong. The concept is good. The picture is wrong. Where does this ladder, stairway, staircase, or bridge go from? Where does it go to? What does it connect?
Earth
to heaven. From what point on earth? From what point on earth?
Where he was.
From where he was. Where did he lie down? Where did he lie down? End of verse 11.
Right where he was.
Where's the ladder? It's going from right where he was to heaven. What did he see on this ladder, staircase, stairway, bridge?
Angels.
How did you know they were angels? I think you see my point. How do you know they were angels? Abraham had visits. Maybe the stories had been told by Abraham, and maybe those stories were still in the family. We don't know. Doesn't tell us that. But it's an interesting question. There was a ladder planted on the ground with its top reaching to heaven, and God's angels were going up and down on it. And there was the Lord. Where?
The top.
Oh, ho, ho. Be careful. I'm sorry. Let's just get a little poll. Those who say my translation says he was at the top, raise your hands. Those whose translations say he was at the bottom, raise your hands.
There's a second one. I have a little thing that says he's down beside him. And yet, that was just for the little...
The phrase is, in my translation, there was the Lord standing beside him, saying, I am the Lord. And there's a name of God there. The God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac, the ground on which you're lying, I will give to you and your descendants. Your descendants will be plentiful as the dust on the ground. You will spread out to the west, to the north, and the south, and on it goes. What is God doing? What is God doing? He is extending the covenant to Jacob that he had made with Isaac and with Abraham, as he had promised to do. Okay? Is he at the top? Of course. Is he at the bottom, standing by him? I think so. God is not confined to space and time.
Mine says above it, so...
Yeah, there's some translations that imply he's at the top. There's a couple of translations that imply he's beside Jacob, where Jacob can hear him speak. And it's not necessarily the case that one is in conflict with the other. It's just interesting to see those. Verse 15. I'm sorry, before we start verse 15, what was Jacob feeling? Number one?
Alone.
Alone. Verse 15, first five or six words.
I am with you.
What's the answer to his problem of aloneness?
You're not
going to be alone. I'm going to give you all the land you're walking on. To the east, to the west, to the north, and the south. What does that apply, deal with? What does that work on? You're going to have some resources. You're not as impoverished as you think you are. I will keep you safe wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this country. He's acknowledging he's going to go beyond this. He's going to go further. I'm going to bring you back, for I will never desert you until I have done what I have promised you to do. I have to admit, I have always been bothered by those words. Does anybody else notice why I might be bothered by those words?
You know, it was of interest to me that the verse here says, I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised.
And what's going to happen when he's done what he's promised?
Right.
Yeah, that's what bothers me. I don't know how to resolve that. I simply point out to you I'm bothered. I suspect if I knew Hebrew and could read it in the original, there might be something there that would calm down my botheredness. Verse 16.
Bill?
Yeah, sorry.
Where are we going? No, years ago we were members down at Patterson Avenue, and they used to go out to Virginia Home and bring people in wheelchairs. And this one lady about 40, in her 40s, never heard her speak any more than just a hum. And we had a guest organist there one Sunday, and he started playing Climbing Jacob's Ladder. Clear as a bell, this lady is singing Climbing Jacob's Ladder.
I thought about us singing that today. If you do not remember, it is powerful. It's one of those things that I learned to sing that. I think I really realized what it was saying when I was a teenager.
But, I mean, we never heard her speak before and never after. It's just something triggered that song.
We are climbing Jacob's ladder. We are climbing Jacob's ladder. We are climbing Jacob's ladder, soldiers of the cross. Every rung goes higher, higher. Every rung goes higher, higher. Remember how that goes? This is where that came from. Verse 16. Jacob awoke from his sleep. When did he awake from his sleep? Answer starts with I. I don't know. There's a verse or two later, if you look in the middle of verse 18, actually, I guess the first of verse 18, early the next morning he does something. The implication is he's awakened in the middle of the night. It's still dark around him. But for a little while there was light. Your picture is that ladder, all this was brilliantly lit. That's part of why he would have known that, I think. The whole place would have been lit up. He awoke from his sleep and said, truly the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. Do you notice he didn't say was? At least not in my translation. Because the vision is gone. But his sense of God's presence is not gone. God is in this place, and I didn't know it. Now, Jacob is getting a lesson. God is beginning to teach him. What's the first thing God has taught him? Somebody in proper relationship with me is never alone. Has Jacob yet stretched that to its full truth? I don't think so. What would its full truth be? Aha, maybe this is something we have to think about. Wherever I happen to be, God will be in that place too. I don't think he's taken that step yet. That implication, I don't think he's taken yet. Because his statements, God is in this place. And his conclusion would have been, how fortunate I am to have been in the place God was. Think of how many places I could have been and God wouldn't have been there. I don't think he has taken the step to realize that that's false. That those who are children of God, where they are, God is. Where did he lay down to sleep? I love the line. Where he was. And where he was, God was there too. Now, verse 17. He was afraid. There is a theme in the commentators that suggests this might have been the first time he was feeling afraid. He might have been a cocky so-and-so who was not all that bothered by all the things that had happened and might have looked on this as a nice adventure. I'll get to go to some new place and they'll have plenty of stuff there and I'll be fine. All I got to do is just get there. But that sense of fear. Now, why would fear have come in if his thought was God was in this place and I didn't know it? Why would fear be the next reaction?
He was going to move on. God was going to go somewhere else. Yeah. Maybe God wasn't going to be with him.
God's back there. Mm-hmm. The things I've done, God saw him back there, but I'm over here. And I'm getting away from all that. And part of it is, the Bible teaches something very interesting. The Bible teaches that the beginning of wisdom is the fear of God. The beginning. Where does God take you once you've gone through that experience? He takes you to the place where he says, and he says it over and over again, do not be afraid. Do not be afraid is not said first. Be afraid is said first. But on the other side of the awe of God for who he is the loss of that fear because we become people who know him and he knows us. Yes?
I'm thinking maybe he was afraid because, you know, in verse 16 he says, and I did not know it. He didn't realize that God was with him. And he was fearful because maybe he thought God was thinking.
And I'm not quite sure that he knows yet God is with him. He knows God is here and he thought God was back there. It's an extension a little further than I think he's reached so far to think, and when I'm over there, God's going to be there too. I'm not sure he's made that leap. But certainly, I found God in a place I didn't expect to see. Okay? Yes, ma'am. Right. God has said to him, I will never leave you. I will never desert you. I will be with you. I'm suggesting that I'm not sure Jacob has internalized that yet. What he said is, I didn't realize, God is with me even here, and I didn't realize that. That's not what he said. God is in this place, and I didn't know it. I hear a difference. I may be reading something into it, and I recognize that's possible. I want to take you to a couple of places before we get too far from this. Let me take you first to Psalm 139. Psalm 139, I want to start at verse 7. Where shall I go to escape your spirit? Where shall I flee from your presence? If I scale the heavens, you are there. If I lie flat in Sheol, there you are. If I speed away on the wings of the dawn, if I dwell beyond the ocean, even there your hand will be guiding me. Your right hand holding me fast. The choir actually sang this as a special just a week or two ago, a different setting of this, and some of you who are in the choir who pay attention when we sing, you might have heard this. Now, I want to contrast this. It's very interesting how the Bible sets this up. I want to contrast this. One book back is Job. I want you to find Job chapter 23. And I want you to lay this alongside of the sermon that Travis gave us this morning. If you haven't been into the sermon yet, pay attention to that in this context. You just heard Psalm 139. One book back, the book immediately before Psalms, is Job. You find Psalms, go one book back to Job. Job 23. I want to start at verse 8. Job is speaking. Listen to what he says. If I go to the east, what does he say? No. He's not there. If I go to the west, I cannot see him. If I seek him in the north, he's not to be found. Invisible as ever if I turn to the south. And yet, he knows every step I take. Job is recognizing there are times we cannot perceive God's presence, but trust that God's presence is there instead. That is expressing things more in line of the subject doubt, which the pastor is talking about today. Let me take you to Jeremiah. This is on the other side of Psalms, just after Isaiah. Jeremiah chapter 23. This time you got God's commentary on this subject. Job 23, verse 23. Jeremiah 23, verse 23. Thank you for your kind and gentle correction. Jeremiah 23, verse 23. God is speaking. Am I God when I'm near and not God when far away? Can anyone hide somewhere secret without my seeing him? The Lord demands. Do I not fill heaven and earth? God demands. Now, I want to go back to Psalm 139. You kept that in your target, right? And I want to read a little bit more of Psalm 139. I want you to see the context here. Psalm 139. I want to read the whole of Psalm 139, or at least most of it. Lord, you examine me and know me. You know when I sit. You know when I rise. You understand my thoughts from afar. You watch when I walk or lie down. You know every detail of my conduct. A word is not yet on my tongue before you, Lord, know all about it. You fence me in behind and in front. You have laid your hand upon me. Such amazing knowledge is beyond me, a height to which I cannot attain. Where shall I go to escape your spirit? Where shall I flee from your presence? If I scale the heavens, you are there. If I lie flat in Sheol, there you are. If I speed away on the wings of the dawn, if I dwell beyond the ocean, even there your hand will be guiding me, your right hand holding me fast. I will say, let the darkness cover me, and the night wrap itself around me. Think about Jacob as I read those lines. I will say, let the darkness cover me, and the night wrap itself around me, but even darkness to you is not dark. Night is clear as the day. You created my inmost self. You knit me together in my mother's womb. For so many marvels I thank you. A wonder I am, and all your works are wonders. You knew me through and through. My being held no secrets from you. When I was being formed in secret, textured in the depths of the earth, your eyes could see my embryo. In your book, all my days were inscribed. Every one that was fixed is there. How hard for me to grasp your thoughts. How many, God, there are. If I count them, they are more than grains of sand. And if I come to an end, I am with you still. Something of that psalm was what Jacob was experiencing. Let me take you, I think I've got time to do this, let me take you quickly to Philippians chapter 4. This is one little piece that's in the middle of something. In a powerful section that goes from Philippians 4 to Philippians 9, there's a little section at the tail end of verse 5. Four words in my translation. The Lord is near. The Lord is near. If you go to Ephesians chapter 3, that's one book before. Ephesians chapter 3, that's one book before. Start at verse 14. Paul is praying for the people of Ephesus. This then is what I pray, kneeling before the Father, from whom every fatherhood in heaven or earth takes its name. In the abundance of his glory, may he through his Spirit enable you to grow firm in power with regard to your inner self, so that Christ may live in your hearts through faith. And planted in love and built on love with God's holy people, you will have the strength to grasp the breadth and length and height and depth, so that knowing the love of Christ, which is beyond knowledge, you may be filled with the utter fullness of God. Something of that is what they were talking about. Now, we won't take time to look them up. I'll simply give you references. You can look these up later. In John chapter 1, verse 51, Jesus identifies himself to Nathanael as the person that the latter was representing as bridging from earth to heaven. You will see, he said, the angels going up and down on me. If you go to Acts chapter 7, as Stephen was being stoned, he cries out that he sees that ladder and sees God at the top of the ladder calling him home. There's a place here, a picture here that echoes through the whole of the Bible. This little place in Genesis, this experience that Jacob is having, it becomes a part of all we say. What was Jacob's response? I want to go back to Genesis 28. I'd like you to join me there. Genesis 28. Bring some index cards next time. You can have an easier time with this. Verse 16, Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, "Truly the Lord is in this place, and I did not know." He was afraid and said, "How awe-inspiring this place is. This is nothing less than the abode or house of God. This is the gate of heaven." Early the next morning, Jacob took the stone he had used for his pillow and set it up as a pillar. There's a play on words there. Pouring oil over the top of it, a makepiece altar, if you will. He named the place Bethel, Beth, house, El, of God. Bethel, house of God. Before that, the town had been called Luz. And he then made a vow. A couple of commentators point out this is the first recorded vow in the Bible. Now, my question to you is, how did Jacob do in this vow? Read it very quickly. How did he do in this vow? Does this sound like a worthy vow for someone in right relationship with God to make? Commentators differ on this. Some commentators say it's a good thing that he made a vow. He recognizes the need to have a response to the vision that God has given him. Others look at the vow and say, sounds pretty self-centered to me. How many ifs do you see through here, either stated or implied? If you do this, if you do this, if you do this, if you do this, then I guess I'll let you be my God. And so the commentators think, well, Jacob must have a little bit a ways to go yet. But look at what he says. Look at what he says. Remember what he was probably experiencing, what he was probably feeling. If God remains with me and keeps me safe on this journey, if I am not alone, if God gives me food to eat and clothes to wear, what's that doing? He was impoverished. Take care of that. If I come home safe to my father's home, if I am welcomed home, the shame and reproach is taken away. Then God will be my God. How well or poorly he may have stated it, how selflessly or selfishly he may have reported it, at least he seems to have noticed what his big three problems are. And he has recognized God is addressing those. The statement of conditional implies to me that he doesn't quite believe God's going to do it.
Do you think he's...
knows about
the Tower of Babel?
Tell me the context in which you asked that question, sir.
God took a different approach there when they were building the Tower to Heaven.
Good point. I don't know. That would be an interesting thing to think about. I hadn't thought about that connection. They were building their own Tower to Heaven instead of using the one that God had built. Interesting. I don't know that he would have thought of that. I didn't. So it makes me think he wouldn't. It makes me think he wouldn't. Oh, yeah. That's back in chapter 11 or something like that. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. I'll ponder that one.
Is this where the tithe was mentioned first?
Abraham had given a tithe to Melchizedek early. He mentions a tithe again here. And you sort of feel like, you know, okay, if you really deliver on this, then okay, you get some back. The more you give me, the more you get. You hear something selfish in the way it's worded. And most commentators say you ought to be hearing that. But he has made a vow. He has premised that vow on his, what I think are the three deep need areas. He won't have articulated all the different things that you did, but I think he's recognizing these are where my needs are. And a God who provides those needs is one worthy of worship. I think you could say it positively. I don't think he did. But you can feel God taking a step with him. Three things as we finish. God is in places we do not expect to find him. He can and does still love us, still bless us, still give us his vision, even when we have failed him and sinned. He sometimes delays his action. With Jacob, he seems to have speeded it up. And he can comfort us, even when we're not prepared for it. I think the last thing Jacob expected was what happened. And when it did happen, I think it was an experience he remembered the rest of his life. Let's have a word of prayer as we go. Our Father, we thank you for this morning. We thank you for this story. We understand by the stories being mentioned in so many other places, we understand something special is happening here. And it's happening to somebody who's not very admirable, somebody who doesn't have a whole lot of charming qualities that we should admire. Somehow, in your mercy and your grace, you've taken someone right where they are, someone not so nice, and you're beginning to move and work in them. You're giving them a sense of your presence, your provision, your purpose, your direction, and your acceptance. Help us understand you're doing the same for each of us. All this we pray in your Son's name. Amen.